It's one of the Catholic Church's Eastern rites. And no, it's not just found in the East. In the age of international travel and migration, you'll find a Syro-Malabar church just about anywhere, even perhaps just down the street. Well, originally founded by St. Thomas himself some 2,000 years ago in his travels to India, the Syro-Malabar church today counts some 4 million Catholics around the globe. As a Latin Rite Catholic who doesn't know much about this Eastern Rite, the second biggest in the Catholic Church, I asked the major archbishop of the Syro-Malabar Church, Archbishop Mar George Allancherry, to help me fill in the gaps.
But we were very much Latinized in our liturgy, in our church administration and so on, for about 4 centuries, maybe 3.5 centuries.
The Archbishop explains that the Syro-Malabar Church is one of 3 Catholic churches in India, the Latin Rite and the other native Syro-Malankara Rite. During the early colonial times, missionaries introduced the Latin Rite into the country, and Archbishop Allancherry says his Syro-Malabar Church's rites have maintained a mix of Latin and Eastern traditions.
Because of this Latinization, now in our church, we do not have what we call a pure Syro-Malabar liturgy. Everything is rather mixed with the Latin style also. To unite all the 3 churches, individual churches, we have what we call a Conference of the Catholic Bishops of India, CBCI. And by the efforts of this conference, there is a communion and also collegiality, cooperation in the missionary and other activities of the church. This is the conference that guides. Mm-hmm. And to tell the truth, there is a very fine mutual understanding and functioning. Of course, now and then there may be differences of opinion and a little way of misunderstanding and so on, which we will discuss and settle if we go on in full cooperation.
In a big change from the past, where the major archbishop was appointed by the Pope in Rome, Archbishop Allancherry is the first Syro-Malabar church leader to be elected by a synod of bishops. The event was an important milestone for the Syro-Malabar church, which Pope John Paul II raised to sui juris, or autonomous status in communion with the church, in 1992.
We were always requesting from the Apostolic See a recognition of an individual church for us. That is called a church sui juris. And we got it in 1998. But because of the Latinization of which I spoke earlier, there were questions of disunity in our church regarding the liturgy and many other points regarding the traditions. And in order to unify us more and more, the Apostolic See was very careful. And although they gave us the major archiepiscopal status, they were holding certain of the provisions reserved to the Holy See, for example, liturgy and church administration. And then gradually, the liturgy was given to us and also the church administration was given to us. The 2 first major archbishops in the beginning did not have it, but the second one towards the end had all the privileges restored for our church. But regarding this point of election of the major archbishop, it was exercised for the first time in my case. So that is the speciality. It is true that we have thereby come to the full experience of the sui juris church. The individuality of the or the identity of this church is fully established. And by this election, our Synod of Bishops has expressed that the church has come of age and that the church can manage its own affairs.
My husband comes from an Eastern Rite himself. We married in the Latin Rite. Our kids have had been baptized or received confirmation in one or the other. Of course, they're both beautiful in their own ways. But while we've taken this situation as being normal, it does pose challenges to some of the faithful who would like to keep alive the Eastern rites, the Eastern traditions. So what sort of challenges do you, as head of the Syro-Malabar Church in all of the world, what sort of challenges do you confront every day?
You see, the Surah Malabar Church do feel as a whole that we have a heritage of faith and practice of faith right from the time of St. Thomas.
Which goes back 2,000 years.
Yeah. And we have a liturgical celebration which is a really valuable exercise of the faith we have. Then our way of catechesis in the church, catechesis which we are systematically giving to our students, our children and youth. And we have our own family prayer and also the prayer units, etc. And the participation of the laity in the administration of the church, which is not that really powerful in the Latin tradition. And all these unique traditions we want to keep. And our people also, wherever they go, they want to keep. So because of that, if they do not get this facility, tensions are created. And there is some misunderstanding also caused between the Latin bishops or Latin authorities and then with the communities of our diaspora church. And that conflict is there.
Well, in fact, in speaking to you, Pope Benedict encouraged what he called the essential need for cooperation with Catholic bishops and pastors of other rites. Mm. So you do think that there is need for more cooperation?
You see, the cooperation is always from either side. And there should be understanding from either side. Mutual understanding, mutual dialogue will surely improve the situation. But actually, the question from the part of the Latin bishops is that they always think about a jurisdiction which is territorial. They think that a territory is given to them and nobody else has any right to do things there. All should be done through them. But according to our traditions, things can be done only by our priests and bishops. This is the real problem. And there is nothing impeding the apostolic see to entrust us this work. Because every church has to grow on it in its own way.
This whole issue was brought up at the Synod of Bishops for the Middle East,
yeah.
Where there are many Eastern rites,
yeah.
Catholic rites. Do you expect that that's going to be treated in some way in the post-synodal document which is being worked on now?
I hope so. But the church has to address that problem because the universal church is a communion of individual churches. Even though some of the individual oriental churches are very small communities, we have to protect them and we have to cherish their heritage and keep them in the universal church. And it is a task of the Latin bishops and churches to protect it. And there are many churches who understand it and act accordingly. For example, in the United States, all the Oriental rites have their own freedom and they work in full collaboration with the other bishops. Australian bishops are also very open to it. But in some other countries, I don't know why, they are not very open to this question. Church has to get open. The Ukrainian church and the Syro Malabar church are the most numerous churches among the Orientals. We have 4 million Catholics. I think they have a little more, four and a half million Catholics all over the world. And these churches with their heritage of faith and practice of Christian life can very well strengthen the universal church. So it is up to us to be open one to another. Holy Father is not simply advising us alone to cooperate. He is advising the universal church that there should be mutual cooperation. That is my understanding.
There is an Indian priest named Father Joseph who celebrates Mass at my church on Sundays here in Rome. Here, of course, in Europe, we see a major crisis in vocations and all elsewhere around the world as well. Now, the Pope, when he spoke to you, he praised your work in fostering vocations in your dioceses. Why do you think we've seen more vocational success in India, for example, in your church, than elsewhere in the world?
Simply because of the practice of faith in our church. These are the elements which I mentioned, some of which are very much lacking in the Latin church and which gives rise to the fall or decline in vocations. We are an official church in many countries and the distance between the priest and the bishop and the people is very wide. See, we are not a community creating the real church or the communion of the faithful together with priests and bishops. It is not a question of authority that we have to exercise. What we have to do is a diaconia, a service in the community. And if there are more and more intake from either part, then the church will come to the true nature. In our church, I don't say it is achievement by us who are presently now. That is a tradition that come up which we want to keep. And this is precisely what gives rise to vocations. You see, where our communities were recognized and dioceses were given, we have now vocations. For example, some 25 years back, there was a diocese given in Kalyan near Bombay. Now we get vocations from there. And the Siramal communities which are elsewhere, which are not recognized with our own bishops or exarchs, we do not get vocations because they go in the Latin way. And
so we're seeing Indian priests come here to the heart of Christendom.
Yeah. We are ready to do that. Yes. But at the same time, give us the freedom to develop on our own way. And that is what is needed. The richness or the heritage of the St. Thomas Christians all over the world shall not be caused to decline. It has to be fostered. And that is the function, the responsibility of the Universal Church. I hope the Holy Father will do that.